Welcome to Pathways, a podcast by Grenadian STEAM. Here, we dive into the journey of Grenadians and West Indian professionals navigating their careers in the STEAM fields, both at home and in the diaspora. We discuss their failures, their successes, and their moments of learning with the goal of exposing interested listeners to the depth and wonder that is a career in STEAM. I'm your host and president of GrenSTEAM, Arlene Hayes. Join us. Press that subscribe or follow button on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss a new episode. Shanezi Frank is a master's level counseling psychologist currently working as a guidance counselor at a secondary school in Grenada. She attended the University of West Indies, Cavehill, where she obtained her Bachelor of Science degree in psychology, graduating with first class honors. She went on to complete her master's degree in counseling psychology and graduated with distinction. Shanezi is passionate about the field of psychology and hopes to one day work with couples. However, she currently finds great joy in helping to mold and guide some of the young minds of Grenada. In her spare time, she enjoys reading, spending time with friends and family, and playing with her three adorable dogs. I hope you enjoy today's chat, and if you do, be sure to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a review, or drop us a note on social media and let us know what you want to hear more of. Hi, Shanezi, and welcome to Pathways.
Hi, Arlene. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. All right. Now, before we dive into the middle of it, let me ask you a random question. Okay. What is your dream job? Let's say you didn't have to think about money or education. What would you be doing?
Dream job? What would I be doing? Honestly, I think it would be something very relaxing, like a travel vlogger, because I do love vlogging and I love traveling. So if I could combine the two and just travel the world and not have to worry about paying for those trips or anything, that would be my dream job.
Nice. I could see it.
Yeah.
All right, Shanezi, tell us where in Grenada you are from.
I'm from Calavini in St. George, in Grenada.
Okay, born and raised?
Yes.
Nice. And so growing up as a student here, what were your school days like? So thinking primary, secondary school.
Okay. Well, primary, I went to a private school. So that was nice. I got a lot of guidance and direction because it was a small school and there was a lot of encouragement and so. And secondary as well was pretty good. I went to St. Joseph's Convent and that was great. I wouldn't say it wasn't smooth sailing though. I had some challenges, especially my first 2 years there, because I was younger than all of my classmates and sometimes I would get teased and I would cry. It was not always. But overall, I would say my school days were really great. And I'm still very close with the friends that I had in convent. So some great things came from it.
Okay, good. Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit more about secondary school. When you were in secondary school, maybe specifically around Form 3, when you had to start choosing subjects and so on, did you have any idea what you wanted to do after school?
Truly, I used to change my mind like every few months. Mm-hmm. The things I wanted to be. So I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a computer programmer. Computer engineer, it was always something else.
Yeah.
So no, I wouldn't say I fully knew, and I definitely didn't see myself doing what I'm doing now.
Okay. So then how did you go about choosing your subjects then at that stage?
that time, I chose based off of what I was interested in then. Mm-hmm. And just turned out that I was lucky that the subjects I chose were applicable in other areas. So, because generally speaking, for universities, they don't require too many specific subjects unless you're doing something really specialized. So it worked out in that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So with just like what fields did you align yourself with? Were you sciences or business?
I was science in convent for sure. All science. I did no business in convent.
Okay. All right.
I should say that. I did POB in commercial.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you did do commercial, yeah. So after secondary school, mm-hmm. what did you go on to do? Did you go to community college? And how did you choose what you did next?
Right. So after secondary school, I went to commercial and then I went to TAMCC. And I did very different subjects to what I was doing in convent. So as I said, I did science in convent. And when I went to TAMCC, I decided to do business. Right. So luckily I had the POV. And so I did business management, economics, and math at TAMCC.
Okay. And what was the reason for that choice?
I have no idea. I knew I wanted to do math because I always loved math.
Okay.
And I knew I didn't want to do science anymore. And I figured, you know, business is something you can apply to various fields, mm-hmm. even if open a business, you can use it in some way. So it felt like a degree that I could use. So I decided to go that way.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. So you eventually ended up in psychology.
I did. Right?
So at what point of your life after school did you decide on that path?
Okay. So I decided on psychology while I was working. So this was after I finished TAMCC. I was working at the bank and I knew I wanted to study, but I didn't know what I wanted to study. Mm-hmm. And so I did some research into the programs that UWE was offering because that's where I wanted to go to study. And I saw they had this program in psychology. I knew nothing about psychology. I was just like, okay. Well, I shouldn't say I knew nothing. But what I knew was kind of like what you see on TV. So I knew people might go to somebody's office and you sit and, or you lie down on a couch and you talk about problems. But in terms of what the study of it entailed, I did not know. But it intrigued me. When I looked through the courses, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I like this subject. This sounds like it would be interesting. I think I will enjoy this. And so I chose it based off of that because I didn't want to study something that would be boring to me or something that would be, you know, in something that you're not enjoying, because I figured after starting to work already and getting a feel for what work is like, I knew I wanted to do something that I would enjoy. That was my goal. Study something that would lead me to a career that I would actually enjoy doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So once you got to UWE, what was that degree like? What were the courses? What did you did? What I'm assuming you learned a lot more than what you had known about on TV. So, okay. What did you uncover?
So, I learned that there are lots of subdisciplines within psychology. That counseling is one very tiny aspect of it, which I definitely didn't know before. You know, you go in thinking it's just that, but there is like developmental psychology, cognitive, abnormal, like the list is extremely long. Yeah. And that in itself was really eye-opening because it showed me just how big of a field this is that rarely gets any attention, you know? So I learned a lot. The courses were really interesting. I had some great lecturers, some not so great, but most of them were great and they explained everything really well. And that really grew my love for it. And while I didn't switch to any of the newer types of psychology that I learned about, because what I do is counseling psychology, which is essentially what I learned, like what I saw on TV.
Mm-hmm.
It was still really great to get that experience because the undergrad degree gave you a bit of, not all of them, but some of them. So we did like some developmental psychology courses, cognitive psychology, a little bit of abnormal. It was a mixture. So at the end, you had a good idea as to what some of the areas within psychology was like.
Okay. So you mentioned it that you currently work in counseling psychology. Do you call it counseling or clinical psychology?
But those are actually two different ones.
Ah, okay. So can you explain the difference?
Yeah, well, I can try. So, clinical psychology is usually just a bit more, I want to use the same the word clinical. It takes counseling psychology to another level. So the clinical psychologists usually have a bit more to do with actual, what's the word I'm looking for? So counseling psychology deals with more day-to-day issues. So for instance, you are feeling stressed, you're going through something in your day-to-day life, mm-hmm. that is what you go to a counseling psychologist for. If you have an actual mental illness or so, you're dealing with severe depression, you have schizophrenia, you have bipolar disorder, mm-hmm. usually those are cases that are more likely to be seen by a clinical psychologist. And there are certain states in the U.S., it's only, I think, two states, or I'm not sure the number, so don't quote me on that part. Mm-hmm. But there are a few states where clinical psychologists are actually able to prescribe medication.
Ah.
And, well, generally speaking, they will prescribe. That will be more a psychiatrist who will prescribe. But it, usually clinical psychologists will deal with the tougher cases. And counseling psychology is more along the lines of helping people to navigate life and to have a better handle or a better grip on things.
Okay. So I was really looking forward to this conversation because in Grenada, in the Caribbean in general, I think you could say, like, mental health, psychology, counseling they're very taboo topics, and they're not, because of that, they're not discussed very much. And so I don't even know, like, what is available out there for people. If I wanted to go talk to a counselor, I don't even know where to go, where to start, right? So can you explain a little bit about what options are available in Grenada? So you mentioned a little bit about, like, the U.S. and how they function.
Yeah.
What is available in Grenada?
Well, there are a couple people who have private practices here. So for instance, I know Josh Hector.
Mm-hmm.
He works at an office called Optimal Solutions, and they provide private counseling. I know that it's available at St. George's University. And there are a few other people who do it, but the truth of it is that it's not a very big market. We don't have a big market for it here, I think. And I think one of the main reasons for that is because the taboo that you mentioned, as well as the cost. Because generally speaking, counseling is not cheap. So a session can run anywhere from maybe $60, $80 to $150, $200 a session, right?
Yeah.
And because of the nature of counseling, it's not a one-off thing. It's not that you come and you sit and you tell me your problems and then I fix you, you know? That's not how it works. It's
right.
You know, days and weeks and months and sometimes even years of therapy, depending on how far back the issue goes, how deep the trauma is. And as well as, well, the methodology that you practice, so the type of counselor that you are. So all of those will factor in, and I think a lot of people either can't afford it or they don't want to spend the money. Oh, and another option, of course, is through government, legal aid.
Okay.
They do offer counseling there as well, and it is more affordable. I can't remember exactly how much it costs, but it is more affordable than if you go to a private person.
Okay, and you said that's through legal aid?
Yes.
Okay, that's good to know. Okay, so let's roll back a little bit. So you finished your degree and you came back to Grenada. What was the next step for you?
Well, I finished my bachelor's degree and then I did my master's degree before I came back.
Okay, okay.
Because at the time, I wanted to do private practice. And really, in order to be recognized as a psychologist in the Caribbean, you have to have your master's. So I did that and then I came back.
Since the master's is required, is there like an accreditation that needs to happen as well?
There is not officially like a body. I know they've been working on it for quite some while, like the Caribbean Association and so. Mm-hmm. But there isn't an actual accreditation process per se as yet. So generally speaking, right now, once you have a master's from a university that is accredited, once, and even so, like the program should also be accredited. But I think once the university is accredited currently, they give you the freedom to practice.
Okay.
There is an association here in Grenada, the Grenada Psychological Association, where some of the members do meet, and that provides a bit of support and so, but I am not a part of the association.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So yes, you, when you finished your master's and you came back to Grenada, what was the next step then for you? How did you start practicing?
Well, I didn't.
Okay, so, good to know.
When I came back, I was home for a while, looking for work. I did a little volunteer work. So I was working along with Josh Hector, who I mentioned earlier. He was doing some different private practice at the time to what I mentioned. And so I did some volunteer work with him. And then I taught at TAMCC. I taught a psychology course there for a little while, for a semester. And then the bank called me back. So I used to work there before. They needed someone. And everything else I was doing was small money.
Yeah.
And I, exactly. It was a job. And I had good relations there, so I didn't have a problem going back. So I went back. I was there for about a year, almost a year. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I got through with government to start counseling within the school, which is what I do now. So I currently work as a guidance counselor at a secondary school, and so I work with that school.
Okay. So are you based at one particular school, or do you move around at all?
Yes, I'm at a secondary school. So all of the secondary counselors, each of us is at a particular school, mm-hmm. and those at the primary level are the ones who move around.
Okay. All right. So what is exactly your role? So you say guidance counselor. I don't recall having a guidance counselor when I was in secondary school. I could be wrong, but...
You are, because I had one.
Okay. So yeah, that's the thing. Like, I wasn't exposed to it. I guess maybe I never sought it out. So mm-hmm. what exactly do you do as a guidance counselor?
Okay, so what I do as a guidance counselor is that there are two aspects, two major aspects, and then I guess smaller things that come in along the way. But two things I do are provide guidance and counseling sessions, that's classroom sessions. That's where I meet with the students on a class by class basis. So I'll go to each class once per week mm-hmm. and speak with them generally about various things that might be affecting them in life at this time, as well as things that may affect them in the future. So we go through topics, a range of things like peer pressure. We will look at personal hygiene, sexuality, relationships, just pretty much anything that you could think about that can apply to life and that could possibly be an issue we will usually get to discussing in classes. So that's that side of it. And then the other side is where I do either individual counseling with students or group counseling. So in those situations, for example, with individual, they will come to me and we will have an actual counseling session. So I have an office, we sit, we talk, and we go through whatever it is that's bothering them and try to figure out how best we can move forward. Mm-hmm. And of course, that service is also available to teachers as well as staff, parents.
Oh, good. Okay. So in that situation, because you mentioned before that counseling is not a one-off thing, does it tend to be a little bit more of an ongoing process? So if someone comes to you and they want to do a one-on-one session, do they tend to come back often, or is it just like, you know, I just want to come talk to you, get things off my mind, and then I'm good?
That is one that differs really from child to child, because there are some who will come regularly for that support. And there are some who maybe they just needed support for this one thing. Maybe they had an exam and they had a lot of anxiety building up towards it, and they just needed somebody to talk to in that moment. So it was one-off for them. Whereas somebody who is dealing with something major at home or really grappling with issues would need many more sessions. And so in those instances, they are more likely to come back. Of course, there are those who have those issues and still choose not to come back either because there is still that stigma in the schools as well, not just outside, where, you know, children might be, oh, you're going to counseling, what happened to you, you have problems. So
yeah,
that as well, that sometimes keep them from coming back. But generally speaking, there's a mixture.
Yeah, so now that you mentioned that, I'm curious, is there any way that, whether it's the government or schools in general, are trying to combat this stigma? Like, is there any way that you can have, maybe in these group sessions or class sessions, just talk to students about, you know, the importance of mental health and so on?
Yeah, that is actually done. That is one of the topics that I tend to discuss with students at some point in their time at the school, you know, the importance of taking care of your mental health, because what I've noticed is that people tend to place high value on physical health, but they ignore mental health. Even when you look at just the way things like sick leave and so are done, you know, you can call in sick and say you have a headache, or, you know, you don't feel well. But if you call in sick and say, you know what, mentally, I just feel a little off, they'll be like, well, shake it off.
Yeah. Come right? to work.
Kind of that expectation. If you're not physically sick, you're considered well. Whereas, you know, literally, if you are not mentally feeling your best, you are not well. And so I try to help persons see that your mental health is just as important as your physical health. They work together. You can't have one, you know, without the other. You can't focus on one at the expense of the other. So I think it is helping, and the students are becoming more aware of it, because a common thing that I tend to see is that when people hear mental health, they automatically think mental illness instead of mental health. And it's sad, because then I have to be like, okay, so if I say physical health, are you going to tell me cancer? And most times people will say no. But when I say mental health, the mind jumps to somebody running through the street naked or something, you know?
So that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
So yes. for those listening who, you know, might be in that part where they don't know the difference, what is it that you mean when you say mental health?
So mental health has to do with feeling well emotionally and like within yourself. You feel socially well, you feel like you can connect with others, you feel in touch with who you are, right? And that's so important. A lot of times we can feel disconnected from ourselves. So it's like we're there, but we're not fully there. And your mental health, similarly to how you may be, you know, you can be physically well, but not 100%. The same for your mental health. So you'll have days where you just feel a little less than that 100, and days when you feel amazing and wonderful. And so that's why it's so important to do things that feed your mental health, doing things like exercising, you know, engaging with people who help to fill you up as opposed to people who will drain you. Eating well, sleeping well, you know, those are great for your physical as well as your mental health. So it's all about doing things that keep your mind happy and free and at peace, and trying to avoid things that will overburden your mind. So overworking and being stressed out, things like worrying too much, working too much, all of those things can negatively affect your mental health, because then you will not be feeling at peace in your mind, because it's really the health of your mind, right? So you want things that will make your mind feel healthy and happy and free. So if you're doing things that are stressful, like you're working too much or you're not making time to do the things that you enjoy, simple things like maybe taking a break to watch your favorite television show, if that's something you enjoy, can help to improve your mental health. It may give you more patience to deal with whatever is coming next. Or maybe taking a walk on the beach, or even just going outside and getting a few deep breaths of fresh air. All of those things can really help to center you and bring you back to a place where you feel more relaxed and in touch with yourself. It makes you better generally, you know, better to be around and better within yourself, because you feel better about who you are and what you're doing.
And, you know, it's interesting because you hear us a lot. You hear people say, I ain't feeling 100% today, no? Or, you know, I ain't feeling day. Or my soul not feeling right, you know? Right. And we don't tend to think about it in that way, that, you know, as well, I'm not feeling sick, I must be fine.
Yes.
But, it's that added layer.
Yeah. And that layer, if you neglect it, it can lead to other issues that can, in fact, affect your physical health.
Right. So then I'm actually curious of what, how much your degree for actually studying psychology delves into some of those more physiological aspects of health and mental health.
Well, we did a couple of courses or so where you got that connection between the mental health and your physical health and so.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, as with a lot of degrees, you find yourself learning a lot afterwards. So even though you've done the courses, it's when you start to practice, when you get into it, when you observe yourself more, that's when you really see it. And you're able to see it in other persons as well. So I wouldn't say it was too in-depth in terms of making that connection. I think we did one course, physiological psychology, which was more along the lines of that connection between the two. But generally speaking, it was not too focused on that.
Keep listening. We'll be right back after a short break. Here on Pathways by Grenadian STEAM, one of our key goals is to help expose students to the various career opportunities that exist for them, and to give them the resources they need to explore their own interests and forge a path forward. That's why we're offering current students and members the chance to join one of our podcast episodes to speak directly to someone who's currently working in a field they might be interested in. Searching for a mentor can be hard, and we want to help you get the answers that might just put you on the right track for the next step of your academic or professional career. If you think you or someone you know can benefit from an opportunity like this, send us an email to our team at pathways@grensteam.org. That's pathways@grensteam.org. Let us know what field you're interested in or who you would like to talk to, and we'll set it up. Listen up for student spotlights like this on our upcoming episodes.
And we're right back to the conversation. So, kind of a little back on the topic of what services are available to Grenadians. You did mention that counseling psychologists cannot prescribe medication and so on when it gets to that level.
Clinical ones can't either in Grenada. So it's only, I think, in a couple states. That's what I was saying. So generally, it's a psychiatrist. You'd have to get that from a psychiatrist.
Okay.
Which is a medical doctor who specializes in psychiatry.
Got it. Okay. Would there be any situation where, let's say, a guidance counselor refers you to a psychiatrist?
Well, what may happen in a case where it may be necessary, you may need to refer them to the hospital. So it's not to a psychiatrist per se, but for instance, one of the times when we are not bound by confidentiality is when somebody is a risk to themselves. So if you find that someone is likely to do something to harm themselves, you as the guidance counselor, psychologist, whoever, you have that legal responsibility to take them to get extra care. You know, if you ignore that, then you know you can be arrested or so. So essentially, yeah, once you're aware of it, you're not supposed to ignore it. That's not a secret that we keep. So, and you let the persons know that early. So you don't just drop it on them later, like after they've confessed all their plans, then you say, oh, well, no, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So inform them at the beginning, because you also want to make sure that your clients always know that they can trust you. Trust is a very important component of that relationship. But yeah, in a situation where you know that the person really does seem intent on harming themselves, or maybe they really seem out of touch with reality and there's not anything that you can do from your position, then yes, usually you will refer them to the hospital, or even sometimes bring them to the hospital where they would see the psychiatrist there.
Okay. So as you touched on a little bit of, you know, the trust and the what you're legally bound to do or to not do, I know, and I've heard that a big stigma in why people maybe stay away from psychologists or counselors is that, well, I don't want my business in the road, right? And personally, I know that to be, you know, false, because you can't, as a psychologist, of course, you can't go out spreading people's business like that. But can you speak to what some of the local laws or practices may be that protect people when they come speak to a counselor?
Okay. And I think that is part of why there is that issue, because the truth of it is that there are not really laws in place to protect people like that. I think because psychology is not so well recognized in Grenada. Mm-hmm. So of course, in certain parts of the world, there are big codes of ethics, and you can lose your license if you, you know, disclose information you're not supposed to, because you have to get, you know, licensed as a psychologist to work in specific areas. You have to be registered and all of that. Because we don't have that governing body here, unfortunately, it comes down to the morals and ethics of each psychologist to really keep their word. So while you should not, the reality, and I think that's what, you know, stops people, because some people do end up breaking confidentiality. The reality is that there isn't much of a penalty. So for instance, in my job, I sign a confidentiality agreement. So if I breach it, I could be fired. But let's say if I'm working privately or so, there isn't anything really that will say, okay, I cannot practice again if I breach this. There isn't a body. And that's what we've been working towards. Well, I say we, we're not part of it. But that's what, as a region, is having a Caribbean body, because like in the States, in the US, they have that. So we want to have something like that here. So, and I think they have made some progress, but as far as I'm aware, we don't have an official thing as yet. But to have something so that when persons breach those requirements, and also not just that, but having requirements that will be suited to the Caribbean itself, that there's something that they can be held accountable to.
Yeah.
Because the rules and so that we're taught, while they can suit a population like the US or the UK, sometimes it doesn't apply to our population simply because of our culture and how different it is. So those are things I think they also want to make some alterations too or so. Because like, for example, one of the things in the ethics, according to the American Psychological Association, mm-hmm. is that you should not have any relationship with your client outside of the client-counselor relationship.
Right.
So especially you should know them only in that capacity. And the reason for that is to prevent any kind of bias or so by knowing them in another capacity. So you shouldn't be friends, you shouldn't be, you know, people who attend the same church and you sing in the same choir. It should be that this is the only time you see this person. Once a week when they come for sessions, that's when you see them. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know that in our close-knit communities, more often than not, you're going to see them in choir, in counseling, and then you're going to see them in town, and you're going to see them in the pharmacy. And so we want to hopefully have something that will better address that.
Yeah.
Because it is very important to have that distinction between client and counselor to keep things, you know, where they should be. You also want to take into consideration the culture and so of the area.
That's really important and not something that I honestly thought of. But yeah, that's a good point. And I really hope that they can make some progress with that in coming years.
Yes, me too.
Cool. All right. So this has been a really kind of wide-ranging conversation. I think it was really helpful, some of the things that you were able to explain. What do you see for yourself in the next 3 to 5 years, let's say, given, you know, the state of the psychology or of, psychology in Grenada, yeah. What is the next step for you?
Well, I think one thing that has improved as a result of like the way the world has been lately is that now with the ability to offer virtual counseling, mm-hmm. that opens a lot of doors that may not have been open before. So that is an option, you know, to do even private things without necessarily having, so if you want to work with somebody in another island per se or so, that is opened up now as opposed to before, where I shouldn't say before it wasn't happening, but people were not considering it as much. But now we've gotten more used to the Zoom and so. So that is more of an option. But in terms of my passion has always been to work with couples. I always, yeah, that is what I went into my master's hoping to do. I found myself working with children, but my passion has always been couples. I believe that, you know, a happy life usually starts within the home. And it starts with the parents. And I think usually when there's a breakdown there between those two people, it affects the children, it affects their work life, it affects their relationships with their friends and so. And so I've always wanted to work with couples and to help them to have stronger, more meaningful relationships. So that is my passion and my goal, hopefully the next 3 to 5. Yes.
I like it. Stronger family systems in Grenada. That's what I want to see.
Yes.
Nice. Okay. So all that said, is there a piece of advice that you wish you had received at a younger age that may have, you know, maybe pushed you in a different direction earlier or just helped you in a way that you look back now and feel like you could have benefited from? So I'll let you choose at the age of 15, 20, or 25. Mm-hmm. What's a piece of advice you wish that you received?
Okay. I think at the age of 15, because when you're younger, people give you advice based off of their ideas of what life should be or what life should look like. Mm-hmm. And I wish that I was told that, and I wish a lot of people will be told that you're not defined by only being certain things, right? So for instance, there's not only virtue. Is that the word? It's not the word. But like, for instance, you know, you grew up thinking the careers you need to aspire to are things like doctor and lawyer and, you know, those things. And once you deviate, you start to hear people saying, well, that won't make money. And I think while it is true that some of these careers, like psychology, is not an easy career to succeed in, especially in Grenada. Some parts of the world, yeah, you're doing really well. But in Grenada, it is a battle.
Yeah.
But I think following your passions, doing what you love, as well as, you know, having other ways, like ensuring you can still make money, is something I wish I knew since then. And it's something that I continue to tell myself now. You know, that it's not always about the money, but it's about happiness and peace of mind and love
for picture.
Yes. Because if you don't love what you do, then all the money in the world doesn't help. It doesn't really change it. I actually saw a video recently with Cardi B on YouTube, and they were asking her if money made things better. And she said it, in some ways it made it worse.
Huh.
So yeah, I think that all of what I was saying there was the roundabout way of saying that I wish I was told not to focus so much on the money. So at all those ages, I think it was.
Yeah, that's a good one. And honestly, sometimes I think there's just like two types of people in the world, that those who are money driven and those who are not. But I think it's important to, as you said, just to see like the bigger picture and to not always focus on the money. Because personally, like when I find myself making decisions based on the money, I'm never happy. I never end up being happy with that decision. There's always something that's like, maybe you shouldn't have done that. You know?
For sure. You know, I've learned too that we can survive on a lot less than we think we need. And not just survive, but thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you can have a lot of money and you just get a lot of things, but half the time you don't use the things. Whereas, you know, you could be making a little bit of money, and as long as it's enough to survive, but, you know, obviously you don't want people to be out there starving. But once you can survive and, you know, be comfortable, I think there is real comfort and so in being able to appreciate that space and not necessarily be constantly wanting more. As hard as it can be with social media and so always telling you that you should want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting as you bring that up, just because it brings back something to me that my therapist has said a lot, is what is enough for you, you know?
Yeah.
That's something that's hard to figure out. And I think that concept of enough, or feeling like you don't have enough, is what usually drives people to always want more, and they want the money. But you don't even know like what you want the money for, right?
Exactly.
All right, Chinezi, well, it's been great speaking with you.
Yes, thank it's so much. Great speaking with you as well. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And to the listeners, thank you for joining us on today's Pathway.